Hi everyone, I'm Chris Aldana, and this is the National Education Policy Center's Education Interview of the Month. This month, we're interviewing Dr. Van Lack, Carolina Montes de Oca, and Ms. Ariel Reyes. Dr. Lack is an associate professor in the Department of Educational Policy Studies in the College of Education at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Her research focuses on how educational leaders can work alongside minoritized youth through participatory action research to enact social change and develop and or strengthen the racial consciousness of K-12 students, educators, and aspiring school leaders. Carolina Montes de Oca is a Latina high school senior and currently holds the position of senior class president and president of youth participatory action research. Ms. Ariel Reyes is currently an assistant principal of instruction at a charter school in the Southwest. She's also a first-gen cisgender Latina college student who holds a master's degree in educational leadership and policy studies. In this month's podcast, Dr. Lack, Carolina, and Ms. Reyes discuss with us their experience conducting youth participatory action research around the well-being and mental health of students and teachers in a high school in the Southwest. What kinds of insights or perspectives does youth participatory action research, or YPAR, offer us when we're thinking about how it might compare to traditional research methods and what those methods teach us about youth experience and perspectives?
So just based off of experience, right, that I can go off of for comparing, when I think about the main perspective of YPAR, it's because it provides an issue that is currently affecting the students and what is important to them. And when I think about the district surveys that go out and they ask students questions about their mental health or about what their experiences in school, they have good intentions. However, those are not the questions that are being asked by students themselves. And so YPAR is students and working within their community and within their experiences, creating questions that need to be answered. And so they're able to ask that to the adults that are around them, but they're able to ask the students that are also around them as well. So are the youth, right? And I think that's a big difference, is that it's not some higher district person or a third party. It's the source asking the questions that they want to hear.
And I think this would be a really great time for, so I don't know, Dr. Saldana, if you know the relationship between the three of us. Yeah. So I was an assistant professor at UTSA, and Ms. Reyes was one of my students getting her master's degree in educational leadership and policy studies. And in one of our classes, several of our classes, we did talk about student voice and, you know, supporting young people through YPAR. And it just so happened that Caro was a student in Ms. Reyes's class, and just lots of sort of things fell into place for us to actually do a YPAR project together. And so I don't know, Caro, if you want to take a minute just to kind of talk about how you got started with your own, you started with your own survey, right? And then it sort of, yeah, so go for it.
Yeah, of course. I was in ninth grade. It was the year after COVID had started, so it was probably like 2020, 2021. And I knew that I wasn't doing good myself. And I'm always someone to go check up on my friends, make sure everybody's doing okay. So I knew, I was like, oh, well, let me just see what my friends are doing. I was like, hey, would y'all, you know, want to take a survey? I was like, of course you can tell me like you're doing good. But I just wanted to see it like in a survey form so I could show the school and it would be more, you know, like legit, I guess you could say. And I sent it to them and I was like, okay. I was like, I need y'all to like go deeper into your responses though. You're not really giving me anything. You're just saying, hey, I'm just struggling with mental health issues. And that was it. And I was like, okay, I need to make this a bigger survey. I was like, I think it was Ms. Reyes at the time. And I was like, I want to send the survey out. I don't know if I can, what can we do? I want to send it out. I just want to check on everybody. And she was like, yeah, of course. She told me what, you can't really say this kind of words, just be more, you know, straightforward, but like very general. And I was like, okay, cool. So I made the survey. It was very, very bad. If I'm being honest, it was very bad, very, very vague. But we sent it out and I mean, I got great responses. I really didn't think people, especially at our age, you know, being what, 14, mm-hmm. you don't really think about mental health and how it affects everybody. So when I sent the data back to Ms. Reyes, she was like, this is amazing. you know, we can make this even bigger. So then when we came to my junior year, which was last year, and we started it.
Coincidentally.
yeah, it was so great. I mean, when Dr. Lett came and she was just sharing everything more on a, you know, a professor level, a higher level. And I was like, this is great. Like, I didn't think we could go this deep into a small survey. And we went that deep into a small survey. It was great.
Kata, let me ask you, how did that shape your experience? You mentioned that, you know, you were struggling like a lot of people during the pandemic. And you had this idea to think about your friends and to ask them how they were doing. But how would you say that that shaped your own experience?
I definitely didn't feel alone. I knew there were other people there. And I think that was the main thing I wanted. I didn't know how to say, like, I want other people to tell me, hey, you're not alone. But nobody was going to say that. Nobody's really going to open up, especially because we're freshmen, but we're in COVID. So we're trying to act cool. And so when we got to, you know, my junior year and we were talking about it, and it got that far, it became this big thing. It really took a turn. I started checking up on my teachers more. I was checking up on my friends more. I was actively searching for ways that we could find a solution to this like mental health issue that was at least going around my school. I knew I probably can, but I knew that I couldn't go and change the whole world right then and there. But I knew that I could help my peers, and that helped me because I knew what I was giving them. I was like, listen to your own advice. And so I listened to my own advice, and it ultimately helped me get better too.
When you think about YPAR, or Youth Participatory Action Research, and the role of students in making decisions about school practice or policy making or resource allocation, for example, what lessons would you all say you've learned from doing this kind of work? Like, Kata, you mentioned that you were kind of surprised at how deep students were willing to go. What should readers of YPAR look to or think about when they're listening to the youth voice that's talking about these issues?
I think it's important to understand that, yes, we're students, and yes, we don't have a high school degree yet. We don't have a diploma. We don't have a college degree. But that we still can know what we're talking about. We still understand that there's mental health issues going around in society, that there's a lot of problems and things that need solutions. I know one thing I wanted to focus on that I liked how it was, digital, was because this generation grew up online. Like, we're not really face-to-face people. I mean, even COVID was all online. So when we sent out these surveys, I feel like people could be more honest because they knew it was anonymous. We made it so clear to everybody. We put it on top of the survey when we were passing them out to teachers through the QR codes. We're like, this is completely anonymous. They don't even have to put their email in. I was like, the most that will know who you are is because of your grade level. And there's hundreds of kids in each grade level. So it wasn't really going to turn anything down.
I think it's also important to note that, like, this project, and I forget the numbers, you tell me, but in terms of the amount of students we had in that particular, it was like a few grades where the turnout for the responses were just like really, really high, which I think I was surprised by. I don't know if you all were. And that's not always the case when educational researchers, who are often, you know, folks from the outside coming in to do research and collecting data, versus this is, Kata, you and your peers who are developing this research instrument and administering this survey. And I want to say, like, I mean, the responses were not just like very insightful, but there were quite a significant amount of students that actually responded to the survey too. So I think there's something to be said, like, when the research happens locally and organically from the voices of students, that's a very different paradigm and experience than a removed researcher from the outside coming in trying to do that work, right? So, Kata, do you remember the numbers?
It was 333 students in total for high school. And then I think the percentage was like 90% of high school teachers responded. And then I think 96% of students responded.
Those are astronomical survey response numbers.
And I think as an outsider, as a researcher is trying to support this YPAR project, what I found very moving was that, so students, they selected mental health as being an issue that they wanted to focus on. But it wasn't just themselves that they were concerned with. They were also deeply concerned by the teachers, their schools, and seeing what they were going through, which, I mean, I think, just, you know, it comments on like the how, like, the researchers in our project were very aware of just the turmoil and the challenges that teachers were experiencing during COVID as well. So,
Vaughn, what would you say is the role of a researcher in a YPAR project? If you know, it's so traditional for us to say, here are my research questions, I need to write this paper, I need to collect this data. How do you facilitate this beautiful work that's happening and all these like beautiful outcomes?
I appreciate you saying beautiful, but I would say it's very messy, chaotic. And, you know, I think Gato and Ariel can attest to that. And, you know, and they can probably speak more to like what they thought my role was. And I can say that, you know, I consider myself, when I'm in these spaces as like a university faculty member, that I'm trying to help facilitate these experiences for these young folks, because, you know, they definitely come in with their expertise and lived experiences, which should be at the center. And I bring in, you know, sort of the technical skills of like, okay, so how are we going to develop this survey instrument, and how are we going to analyze this data? And so I don't know if Gato or Ariel, I don't know, what do you all think my role was in this project?
I think more of just because you did want it to be authentic and true, with like no bias or no, you know, and like your own intentions in this. It was just like, what is the raw data here, and what is actually bothering students or the youth? And I think for you specifically, it was just a guide of support, because you educated us on what YPAR was, right? And then you taught us difference between the qualitative and qualitative data. And then you allowed students to really just brainstorm, from what I was able to see as an observer, of more of just you being a guide. And Gato, like, you can speak on the experience with how you saw Dr. Lack, but for sure from my end, it was like a supporter and a guide.
I completely agree. I feel like what Dr. Lack stamped with us in the very beginning was that she didn't want to send out the survey. The survey wasn't for her to send out. It was for us to send out. She wanted it to be our project, but she definitely mentored and guided us through it. It was simple as like changing a question from, do you like school? Do you enjoy coming to school? How does school make you feel? Making things just more deep and giving us that, you know, educational background part, and giving us so much more insight to make it the survey 100% better.
And I would also add that because this project was funded from a grant, that another thing as a university researcher that, you know, and this goes to maybe one of your questions about the ethics of this all too, is like, if I want students to engage in this work outside of school hours, like, I want to be able to support them, right? So monetarily, researchers got a small stipend. I also think it's very important that you bring snacks. You got to come correct as a university faculty member. Like, I want to feed the young people that I work with. So snacks were very important as well. It may seem like something little, but I do think it kind of helps build this sense of community that I genuinely care about the young people that I'm working with. So.
Oh, they definitely loved the snacks, because it kind of broke the silence. Like, they're all so awkward, but once they're munching, they're like, oh, okay, we're good. We're good. We love Dr. Lack and her snacks, is what the conversations were.
I want to go back to, I described it as beautiful because I just think it's so amazing, the work that you all are doing. But then you all mentioned that there were some challenges and there was some messiness. What did that look like?
So I tried to the best of my ability as a facilitator, and part of it has to do with the fact that I was a K-12 teacher for high school students previously, that I really appreciate structure and knowing what to expect, right? So I always had an agenda, like, this is what we're going to do, but it was also really important to be flexible. And I know there were some days where it was like, oh, we only have 5 research co-researchers here today, right? Because, you know, folks have jobs, you know, there's after school commitments. And so being flexible with that your research team, not everyone's going to show up, but what can we do with the folks that are already in that space? I feel like that kind of added to the messiness of this experience.
Starting like, we're in the middle of the research when we were meeting every week, for myself, what I felt like very challenging. One, we were down for the commitment. Like, we were committed. We wanted it to happen. But things happen. And I'm an administrator. And it was very difficult sometimes where I'm like, my boss is calling me like, hey, we need you to burn this fire. Or, you know, we need you to solve this fire thing that's happening right now. And I was getting pulled in three directions at some point. And I'm just like, oh my God, Dr. Lack, I hope you know that I want to be here, but my boss is on the other side and he knows that this is important, but he also needs me here. So I know for myself, it was really challenging to, and sometimes I was the one running the school, both of my partner and then my principal were out. So I remember that being some challenges in the beginning, or from time to time, is just being present and having the time. And again, what Dr. Lack said, like, some students were in two organizations, three organizations at a time. And it's like, hey, you committed to me first. But I also understand, like, these are kids who are very active in leadership as well. So they wanted to dip their toes in all the waters. And it was fun, but it was very challenging to get them to be like, you committed to this first, finish this, and then go on.
Other than, you know, the commitment of it, I feel like sending out the survey in general was just a little bit difficult, because we can't just send out the survey. We have to go through, like, other people need to look at it, and, you know. So we had to send it through our principal, make sure it was okay to send out, our counselor. But once it got out, it was really hard to get the newer kids, the newer freshmen and sophomores to take the survey. It was, our data was so, so low in the beginning. It was like one student per grade level. And then I have teacher connections within each grade level. And I was like, yes, I'm going to use this. I need to go to every single grade team lead I have right now. Every single teacher I know, they need to know that this is a very important survey. I created little flyers of telling what's mental health to a student, you know, breaking it down. I was like, share this with your kids, please. I was like, it can be during like their off time, right there as an exit ticket. It literally takes 5 minutes, like, begging the teachers. And it was some work, but we got it done. I mean, at the end of the day, we submitted the survey, we got our results back, and we're making changes around campus.
And some of the challenges that we're currently facing post-survey is like, are the things that we said we were going to be able to do actually occurring? So students advocated for an additional counselor, like social-emotional counselor, because we have three college counselors here who just focus on getting students into college and not so much the emotional aspect of it. And so we had one social-emotional counselor for 765 students from 6 through 12. And based off the data that we received, the push was to advocate for another counselor. Currently, we actually didn't have her for a month, and we just rehired for her position because she ended up resigning, I believe, at the end of November. So the kids didn't have her for December and half of January, and then we just got our new social-emotional counselor. However, we're still at one for 765 kids. One of the things that, you know, post survey that the kids also came up with and based off the data was that teachers needed more like morale, more joy. And some of the things that teachers advocated for that they needed were, help with organizing their classroom and having teacher snacks and having just like a safe space to go to for, kind of just like to decompress, you know, you see three classes at a time, you know, in a row. And then it's like, finally it's your planning, but your planning might get taken away. And then, you know, at some point in the day, you kind of just need a moment to gather yourself. And we had advocated for a teacher rejuvenation room. And in the beginning of the year, it was said that, hey, we have the room, but there's so much, because we have one-to-one technology on our campus. So we're really grateful for that each kid is able to have a laptop. However, that brought us to the gap of, we have the room, we have the space, but currently it's filled with laptops. And until each of those laptops find a home or a classroom, we can't give the teachers their rejuvenation space, even though we have the sofa, the humidifier, the Keurigs, the sound machine, all the things that would kind of just allow teachers to relax. just didn't have a space to go to.
And I think what's important to note here too is that, you know, we acknowledge that, you know, there are certain aspects about like Garo and what Ms. Reyes experienced within this K-12 setting that are far beyond our control, right? And so what we try to focus on is, so what is within our control? And so these suggestions, like these were suggestions from the young folks in terms of what to do. Like, now that we have this data, what is our action plan, right? Like, how are we going to try to create change within this particular scenario that we are up against? And so what we're seeing is just how messy that can be, right? Given the constraints of this context. So
how do you, I know that that your research project was focused on mental health, but how do you feel this experience and this work has equipped you to address problems in the future? So Ms. Reyes as a administrator, or Caro as a student, maybe potentially one day as a doctoral student or a PhD, how do you see this as an experience that you'll take into how you just do your work from here on out?
So when just because I was there to see kids brainstorm, it was so powerful, right? And powerful in the sense of like, wow, my kids just created this really big question. How does the mental health of teachers directly impact the mental health of students? And then seeing them break down every step to get to those little questions, to get to answer the big questions, was so, like the word you said, beautiful to see, right? Because it's such a challenging thing. And once we receive that information and the data, it sits with you because these are people you care about. These are the kids you see every single day. And then these are the teachers that you work with every single day. And their presence make a direct impact to either yourself or to 100 kids in a day, right? And since the survey, since the data, in every meeting that requires a plan of action for ceremonies or for teacher joy or for student persistence and teacher retention, I consistently refer back to this data and I hold my team accountable for this. And even though we have, last year my administration team was a team of 10, currently that team is now a team of 6, and that's because we have new add-ons, and at one point it was a team of 4. Even though there are new stakeholders, they are still consistently being reminded or taught what this survey was and how it's important when we're making plans or we're changing systems in the school. And so for myself, I don't let it go. The hardest part is continuing a leadership group like this, like a YPAR group like this, because I'm getting pulled. I don't have the same time commitment that I did before, because now there's even less, like I said, that was 10 leaders. Now there's 6. And that's because some have been, replaced or filled. And so what I can say is that it's consistently being brought up and being advocated for through me. But if I were to exit again or, go on maternity leave again or something, I can't say that that's always in the back of someone's mind.
And I think what Ms. Reyes is also spotlighting is the fact that I think for youth voice to really thrive in K-12 settings, you need adults in those spaces to support the work, right? And so if it doesn't get supported, even if it's like on the sidelines, like let the young folks like center the work that they're doing in their voices. But as adults, you can be in the sidelines to ensure that, you're giving them the supports and scaffoldings they need.
Yeah, I was thinking about it a little right now and picking up on what y'all said. There was definitely a lot of challenges trying to continue, getting the Zen room in and the coffee carts for the teachers and the new counselor. But there's, when it comes down to it, there's only so much I can do as a student. I was constantly going to this main person, which is a junior teacher right now. I was constantly going to him, like, I really need your help. I need you to text everybody you can that's on campus. Like, this is just not getting out the way I want to. I was like, Reyes is not here. I don't know what to do. And he's like, it's okay. Like, let me help you. And then once he sent it out, like, everybody started listening. And it was a little bit disheartening, but it was eye-opening because I knew once it got out that it was going to be okay. You know, I didn't care how it got there. I just knew that it got out and I'm getting my data. And from there, I just kept advocating. I just kept advocating for anything that wasn't changing. I was trying to secure my spot my junior year for my senior year as senior class president. And so I knew, like, being active with the principal and building those relationships with them, that I would get, you know, get my way. And I mean, it ultimately, it really helped. They're getting more involved into it. And I know that they see the data and they want to change. They don't know how to change or, like, create the change around the campus. And I'm constantly thinking of ideas and ways to make it everything better. And it's really empowering. I didn't think that I would, you know, be here today in a room doing a podcast. I didn't think I would be going to, you know, all these other places and sharing my work with all these people that, like, you know, I would never think I would meet. And I mean, that's what it came to now. So, you know, all the hard work paid off.
Well, what Gatto's alluding to is that we have a roundtable session at ARA in Philadelphia in April that we'll be presenting. So just to put that out there into the universe. And yes, hopefully we'll also be writing about this project in a journal coming up. So
that's awesome. I'll see you all in Philadelphia then.
Hey, that's awesome.
Let me ask you about recommendations. So you all have obviously learned so much from this experience. What recommendations would you offer to stakeholders, whether that's a state legislature or a room full of principals or a room full of students or teachers? What are the things that you think are the most important to highlight from your experience? And it doesn't necessarily have to be a research finding per se. But Gatto, you talked about how empowered you felt. What would you say you want people to know about YPAR and offering students opportunities to formulate research questions and conduct research?
Yeah, I mean, I know if I got empowered by seeing how much change that I was doing around my school, and it's incredibly small compared to a normal high school, I think it can happen anywhere. I know that there's a lot, other people at different campuses have different relationships with their admin and their peers and everything. And we're obviously a lot more close knit here because all my peers have been here since we were all in sixth grade and we're seniors now. So we're all tight knit. We're comfortable with sharing everything. But if other schools decided to, you know, put a YPAR within their community, that it would empower a lot of people, because seeing the change and seeing the effort that they're putting in, making a difference, you know, putting in something and getting that outcome is the ultimate goal. The outcome being, hey, I created this survey. They're listening to my data and listening to what I conducted this research on. And they're actually, you know, putting a coffee cart around for the teachers and trying to check up on them. They're trying to, you know, lower the work that they're giving their teachers, or giving them an extra day off, or giving them a, you know, an extra break, a few minutes that they need to take their time. And yes, it's small here at my school, but it could be big everywhere else. I think it would be great to have like how all of our teachers that are in the same subject have their own little chat. I think it would be great to have a YPAR group for everybody around, like, San Antonio, everybody inside Texas, to have this kind of opportunity to send out a survey or even a simple letter on explaining what mental health is and what mental health is in schools and how it could, you know, impact lives greatly, and how, what we could do about it.
For myself, I know that, like, when I think of what I would recommend, so as an administrator and as a teacher, I would, and someone who wants to really lead YPAR here, because not everybody's going to have a Dr. Lack in their backyard, right? or to really guide them. But, you know, for someone who wants to launch it and doesn't have someone like Dr. Lack with them, but is, you know, educated on what YPAR is, or even if they want to get educated in it, right? For myself, through my experience, besides the relationship I had with Dr. Lack, the main relationship that allowed this to happen was my personal professional relationship with my principal, because my principal now, I do have a really good personal and professional relationship with them. It's the fact that with my previous principal, he had a deep understanding with where we stood, and he had a good understanding for who I was as a person and who I was as an educator. So I knew that he knew a few things about me. One, that I'm always going to assume the best, or I'm always have the best intentions for others. Two, he really could trust me. So although I was bringing, you know, a stranger onto his campus and doing the survey, that is very like, you know, it's kind of hard for a principal to allow, because it's like you're getting raw data on what your teachers are feeling. And that may not be the most kind words, right? They may not have the best, the most, you know, happy feedback. They may not have that. It's going to be kind of hurtful when you have to sit down and reflect with it and think of like how you are as a leader. So I knew that he could assume the best in me, and I knew that he had a lot of trust in me. And for that, from my previous principal, I'm truly grateful, because I think that had he thought about me differently, or had he not been invested in my own education and my own professional goals, I don't think that this would have been an easy project. Because even when I think about who we had in class, Dr. Lack, I remember that some of them were struggling with their administration in the summertime, because I did like a small one as a project in the summer session, and my principal was like, do what you need to do, like, just, you know, don't embarrass me. And I'm like, cool, I mean, I might, we never know, but we'll figure it out together. And I remember some of my classmates at UTSA just not having that support that I had, and I didn't ever really feel unsupported by my principal. So a recommendation that I would have to other researchers would be, you know, building those relationships. If you're someone who struggles with building relationships, and finding someone, right, who can at least advocate on your behalf, of like knowing that you have good intentions and what you're doing is not for you personally, it's directly for the kids that you're working with. And so that's my recommendations, is building that relationship with the principal.
Yeah. I would also, just adding to what Ms. Reyes and Gatto have stated, that as someone who, like, I train principals, right, or people who want to be future principals. And the big question that I always ask is, how do you know what you know, right? Meaning, we make a lot of assumptions as educators in terms of, oh, I know my students, you know, are struggling in this, and I know that, you know, but how do you really know if you don't actually, like, and I'm talking like not just these formulaic surveys that the district sends out, or that maybe the school sends out to students and families, right? So, and I think that's a challenge for folks in education, adults in education, to really think about that. Like, how do you know what you know? And I would suggest that YPAR, or participatory action research, is a tool to get to that knowledge, right? And this is often knowledge that is localized, that is indigenous to the communities. It's not something that you can get from a national survey. You just can't, right? And I would say that I think in K-12 public schools, we love like cookie cutter approaches to things. Like, here is a brand new curriculum, use this curriculum. And I think what YPAR would suggest is that it's the opposite of that, right? What we want to do is really, how do we create a very organic situation where we're centering the young folks in this particular setting, in this particular city, in this particular moment in time, which is a very different way of engaging young people than just a very general or broad curriculum when we're talking about student voice. And so, which makes it very compelling, but also very challenging to implement, right, in various settings. And so, but I will say this, that if there are adults out there who are interested in this work, then I think it requires a deep and critical reflection about their beliefs about young people. Because I think sometimes adults really harbor a I would say adultism, this idea that young people don't know, right? And so we're here to teach them and tell them. And I think YPAR is very much trying to shift that idea that actually, if anybody knows what's going on in terms of what's happening in K-12 schools, it's actually the young people who are directly experiencing these policies and these rules that are taking place in our schools, right? So
thank you, Dr. Lack, Carolina, and Ms. Reyes for being on this month's podcast. As always, we hope you're safe and healthy. And remember, for the latest analysis on education policy, you should subscribe to the NEPC newsletter at nepc.colorado.edu.